You can read his work at brownzone.com. He's not happy that he has a headline there that says rookie Quinshon Judkins arrested in Florida on domestic violence charge, but he had to write the story. He's Mr. Scott Petrak. Hello, Scott.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Scott.
Okay. Hey, just for to set the record straight on this a little bit, I just happened to look up on the Browns roster just to check in the number of running backs, and I made note that Quinshon Judkins is no longer listed on the Browns website on the roster. And I thought, well, I wonder, is that because he's not signed as a second-round pick? For whatever it's worth, Travion Henderson and Luther Burden, both second-round picks, both unsigned on the respective websites of the Patriots and the Bears. So for whatever that's worth, right now Judkins is not listed on the roster.
He hadn't been on there because he was unsigned. So even before this, he was in his own separate category on there.
Okay. So other teams are and our team isn't. So that's fine.
Correct.
Regardless, is he in uniform? We don't know that. We're going to have to let this play out. Well, all we know is that something happened and it's a bad look, Scott.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, Jeff. And, you know, from a non-football perspective, it's terrible. Anytime you hear domestic violence, and obviously we have to let the situation play out and see how it develops, but anytime you hear domestic violence, it's terrible. It's a bad look for the player, the organization, for the league. The league has made some efforts to try to increase the penalties for anything related to domestic violence, especially, you know, following that Ray Rice incident. It's bad. It's bad that the Browns have to deal with it. It's bad for the fans that they, you know, have to be put through this, and it's not the first time. It's not the first time this offseason Devin Bush had something. It's still in the court process. Last year, Mike Hall Jr., another second-round pick out of Ohio State, faced, I don't know how similar the cases are, but it was a domestic violence or domestic incident in his house that got him suspended for, I think, it was 5 games. So, the Browns have been through this before, so that's the off the field. And then from a football perspective, you know, the Browns are counting on Quinshon Judkins to be, I think, the workhorse back. And we have talked all offseason about the recommitment to the run. Well, you don't draft a guy at number 36. You don't draft a running back at number 36 without the expectation that he is going to help transform that run game, be the number one guy. I expected it to be week one. I don't know if that changes given this weekend's events. It could, if he's suspended by the league and not available week one, it could affect how the Browns view him. That's to be determined. But, you know, when you look at, okay, the formula to win games is run the ball a bunch and play great defense, you need that number one back to run the ball. And right now, I would say there's uncertainty with the guy I thought was going to be their number one back.
So how do you think they approach it? Do they go into this going, okay, well, we got to plan on him probably being out for 6 weeks? Or, I mean, it doesn't matter if he's guilty or not guilty or any of that. I mean, the league's going to do what they want, right? And if the standard is 6 games, how do you approach this if you're the Browns offense?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we know that he won't be there week one. I think you have to let it play out a little bit longer. But they have Jerome Ford, and I think Jerome Ford's value went up this weekend with the arrest of Quinshon Judkins. You know, I like Jerome Ford. I don't think he's a big-time starting back in this league, but he is a NFL running back. There's no doubt about that. He has started plenty of games with this team, but they went and drafted Quinshon Judkins and Dylan Sampson for a reason. They wanted an upgrade at running back. So, you know, I don't know if it's 50-50 or what the chances are, but I think the chances are much better right now that Jerome Ford's your week one starter, and I think it also increases the chances of playing time for Dylan Sampson, who spent a lot of the offseason working at slot receiver. Maybe he becomes the third down back, which was probably a role that was going to be Jerome Ford's. You know, Pierre Strong, where does he fit in this running back room now? You know, I just think there's a lot of uncertainty, but I don't think they're going to stop with their goal of running the ball. I think that's still going to be the plan, and they're just going to have to use those other guys on the roster.
Scott Petrak joining us from the Chronicle-Telegram, brownzone.com. Dylan Sampson, to me, was sitting there as, okay, well, I hope you get some opportunities to show what you can do, and, well, you seem really intriguing. This could lead to more opportunities for him. Scott, guy led his conference in rushing and touchdowns last year, and he looks like he's a looks like he could become a big time running back. This is an opportunity that he wasn't expecting. Probably we'll see how it plays out, but man, if it leads to an opportunity for him, he's got to jump all over that.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think he's an interesting case, Jeff, because when they drafted him, I really liked him at Tennessee. And I know he's not the biggest guy. He's 5'8".
Ran hard, though. Ran between the tackles really well.
Yeah, he does run hard. And he got a bunch of carries in his 1 year as a starter at Tennessee. So I spent a lot of the offseason asking coaches and people and his former coaches and even Dylan, like, you know, where do you fit with Quinshon? Is it a thunder and lightning thing? Are you guys similar? And I thought that Dylan Sampson could be more of a featured back as well. But the more people I talked to, and even Deuce Staley, when we talked to him at the end of minicamp, made it sound like, no, he is the change of pace. He's a guy they're going to use at receiver. Yes, he can play some third down. But I had no indication that, okay, he's going to get a bunch of reps, you know, on first and second down as the ball carrier. Well, that could change now, right? I mean, that's where this could get interesting. And I think he has that ability. I think there's some worry that, you know, because he's not the biggest body, that you can only use him so much. So they would probably, you know, balance him with Jerome Ford. But if Quinshon Judkins misses any amount of time for whatever reason, I do think that gives Dylan Sampson an opportunity that I don't think he necessarily would have had early on in his career as a true ball carrier.
Scott, how does I think part of it is like people are going, oh, the Browns, here we go with the Browns again. But it's a league-wide problem. It's not just the Browns. The Browns are maybe in the upper half of the middle of the pack when it comes to players arrested. I don't know. What can the league possibly do to try to stop these guys from just – and I don't have the facts in front of it, but I wonder how many of these arrests actually happen between the end of mini camp and the beginning of regular camp. What can the league do?
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard what Dan was saying before you guys went to commercial. Yeah, you know, I don't know where the Browns rank. I know that obviously we're so focused on the Browns that it feels like everything is, oh my gosh, drama. And I'm not going to ignore that. And the Deshaun Watson, acquiring Deshaun Watson with everything that he was going on, that everything that was going on with him, right? The two dozen sexual misconduct allegations, like that just tilts the scale so much. But if you took Deshaun Watson out of the equation, then, you know, I think the Browns are probably ranked with most teams. I would argue that I don't think it's gotten any worse with Andrew Barry and Kevin Stefanski. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I remember sitting in front of John Dorsey, having him explain the decision to draft Antonio Callaway and to sign Kareem Hunt, right, when he was going through this thing. So I don't think this is necessarily a Barry Stefanski thing. But when you ask about the league, you know, I don't know, Andy, it's doing as much as it can, or it's trying to do a lot. You know, the league's hands are tied by, you know, just how much you can do, you know, given the criminal justice system and, you know, how much jurisdiction you have. Can you suspend a guy forever? And I mean, there's just a lot of issues that go on that I think makes it hard for the league. And then you have the added factor of, well, you don't want to sit down your best players forever, right? Or for a long time. I mean, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I just know that that's a concern for the league, right? If Tyreek Hill gets into trouble, I don't think the league wants to sit down Tyreek Hill for a long time because he's one of his, you know, most electrifying players. So the league has to deal with that. It's a business. I don't agree with a lot of stuff the league does. I'm sure it could come down harder, and I know it could have come down earlier, right? I feel like even any of the emphasis in the last decade on trying to curb domestic violence and crack down on players was late. And I think they're trying to make up ground and – have they made up enough? Probably not. I think that is a concern for them. But I would also say, you know, it's a societal problem too. So I don't think it's just the NFL. But the spotlight is so bright, and we write about it and we talk about it, that it can't be ignored, and it shouldn't be ignored. I just think it's a really difficult problem to say, okay, Roger Goodell, you know, make sure how many guys are in the league? 1,500 guys in your league, that nobody's doing anything stupid between, you know, June 1st and July 25th.
Scott Petrak joining us from the Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com. That situation will play out. We'll see where more facts should emerge. We'll find out, and we'll see if he's able to go. So I think we've covered that one pretty well. Let me ask you this one, though. With rookies starting up on Friday, how in the world are they going to get reps for four quarterbacks and make a decision? How's that going to work? Any idea?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be easy, and I don't even know if that's – I'm not sure that that's the number one goal.
Yeah, Jeff. Is it even a plan? You know, that's
right. Yeah, I think it was during OTAs and minicamp, certainly, and we saw the two fields with, you know, a lot of times it was the rookies or even just Shedeur Sanders on one field getting reps to maximize that. I think in training camp it makes it harder to do. I could see the first week before they go into any kind of game planning for the preseason, while they're still, you know, going over installations again, I could see them split the fields and have simultaneous drills going on to get the quarterbacks as many reps as possible. But I think at some point that has to stop, and I think it will be relatively early. And then you see, I would suspect, you see Shedeur Sanders get way fewer reps than the other three guys. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's closed the gap or passed Dylan Gabriel. I don't get that sense, even though I thought he performed better in the offseason than Dylan Gabriel. And I think it's about Joe Flacco versus Kenny Pickett, who's going to be your starting quarterback, and then where Dylan Gabriel fits in to that discussion. Does he really have a chance? Are you looking at him to be the backup, or are you going to keep four and have whoever loses the starting quarterback job between Pickett and Flacco be the backup? And I don't know how they feel about that. Part of me thinks that it's going to be a rookie that's going to be the backup, and they move on from one of the veterans, but I could certainly see them keeping all four guys.
What's your take on Kenny Pickett and Jerry Jeudy working out here in the offseason on their own time?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good. You know, that's common throughout the league. It's been common with Browns quarterbacks in the past. You know, they have a history. I remember the first time we talked to Kenny after the Browns traded for him, he mentioned that he had worked out with Jerry Jeudy in Florida. So I think that's helpful. You know, Judy's by far the number one receiver on this team. So if Kenny Pickett's going to get some chemistry with anybody, that'd be a great guy to get it with. I don't know if that tips the scales at all when we're talking about who's going to be your starter week one.
All right. I'm sorry you had to write something you weren't expecting to write, and you're going to lead to more stories on the same subject, but we'll be following you on brownzone.com and get all the news we need to have. Thanks, bud.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott Petrak on the Fan Hotline. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin.
The countdown to Browns training camp of the preseason, it's on as the quarterback competition takes center stage. And the NBA offseason is here, too. So the Cavaliers could make a move at any moment like they did this morning by big new contracts for the boys in the front office. So don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app.
One thing we do know that this does for the Browns, adds another layer of drama, Andy. In case you needed more drama, there it is from the Cleveland Browns. And you know the front office guys had to think when that phone rang.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I don't know. Is it at the point now where you're like, oh, here we go. We know this is going to happen again. I mean, you almost settle in. We I don't want to say we joke about it, but we always say, like, even when we started the show, don't get into trouble in between the time that you have your last mini camp and the start of the regular season.
It wasn't just trouble. Dan's immortal words.
Only three things in the NFL take place this time of year: contract extensions, trades, and arrests.
There you go.
Charity events.
Get arrested.
Charity events.
There's Andy Baskin.
Trying to be positive.
For charity.
No, you know what? You're right. We'll throw that as a fourth because we should have a little bit of positive in there too.
There you go. Nice job, AB.
Hey, no problem.
What'd it be? What'd it jump on? DM?
See all those guys playing in Lake Tahoe this week. That was kind of fun. I enjoyed that. I know you don't care. Never mind. I told you I was going to watch some of it. I watched very little.
I want to go back to the. Well, you know what? Before we do that, Roman's in Canton. Hi, Roman.
Hi, Roman.
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
Good. You good?
Good, good. I just want to ask you guys a question. Do you think this organization is a successful, functional organization? Now, I ask that as like not as if they operate. Yes, they are a business. They are an organization. Would you consider them successful, or is the dysfunction start at the top? Because every year there's something dysfunctional or something where guys aren't on the same page and it gets leaked to the media, and or somebody gets arrested, or one of the rookies does this or that, or the veterans, you know, a guy gets let go and he, you know, talks bad about the top of the organization. Do you think, and it goes all the way top to the city, you know, with the stadium, with where it should be and how they have a relationship with Cleveland, do you think that ultimately trickles down to what happens between the lines?
All right, so let's go back to your first question, Roman. The first question you said,
is the organization successful?
Is the organization successful? From a financial standpoint, 100%.
Without question.
No, at $5 billion successful if you're the Haslams, because according to CNBC, the Browns are valued at $6.02 billion. And if you remember, Jimmy and D purchased the team in 2012 for $1 billion.
But you only get that if you sell.
That's right. You only get that if you sell.
But your asset has been enhanced.
Good point.
Right. So it's a successful marketing organization.
It's a successful business.
Yeah. Art is the only guy that couldn't figure that out, right? Art Modell is the only guy that couldn't figure it out.
Somehow.
Right, right. To the fans' fault, though. Like, we buy in every year, and, you know, we have expectations, and they trick us every year into thinking that it's going to be different, and then it's not. So how do – I guess – my next question is from a business standpoint, sure, but would the dysfunction from the front office, does that trickle down into, like I said, between the lines, going onto the field? Do you think that has any effect on it?
You could make the argument, sure, last year they won 3 games, the year before they won 11. So,
Roman, I would say any business is a reflection of the people who are at the top and right. how they run their business, and it – you know, you treat your employees well, you're going to be treated well, I think, as the person that owns the business. So, yes, I think, and I will say this still in blue in the face, every business is that way.
Okay. Broad strokes, I understand what you guys are saying, but what my point is that every single year it seems like there's some sort of drama, controversy that, you know, some point stems to the top of the food chain. And when are they going to look themselves in the eye and say that's the case, and that's not going to end up, you know, putting the product out on the field? Because we do this every single year, guys. I mean, how many rookies are we going to draft that, and you can say that it happens with other teams, sure, I understand that, but it's always either the Browns, the Raiders, or, you know, team where...
Not completely true on that one, Roman. It's league-wide. You know, you have a lot of young guys in a very aggressive business, and you put a lot of young people together, you're going to have things. Unfortunately, the Browns have had more than their fair share.
Consistently, though, right? But
Roman, they but all
so,
have.
So, I mean, again, I'm looking, and I hate to, I'm not trying to downplay this, but if you go back to that chart that I was talking to from USA Today, that, you know, and that this chart's from 4 months ago. The Browns and every other NFL team are about the same. In fact, the Browns have less than 10 arrests since 2015. And there's, according to this, from 4 months ago, 7 or 8 teams that have more than 10 arrests, for whatever that's worth.
Not going to sit here and say the Browns are, you know, off the hook on this.
None of these teams
but
are.
They all need to be held responsible, because if you're going to bring people into your work environment to represent your team and represent your city, mm-hmm. you're going to try and get it right. And obviously their record for doing that, the percentages are they get it right most of the time. Not that, and again, facts are going to present themselves with Quinshon Judkins, and we'll figure things out.
I also wonder.
But this is going to happen. It happened years ago. It's happening now. It will always happen.
I wonder what the impact of that
in all sports.
I wonder what the impact of the NFL rookie transition program was. Remember when they used to come here to Cleveland? Yeah. I think it was pre-pandemic. They all came into Cleveland. They all went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They all stayed at a area hotel, basically, that could handle the meetings that they had to have, so that they could go in and talk to these guys about all the things that are important, health and safety, and things that happen to you as a rookie that don't happen to regular people, and people that are coming after you for money, or people that might be coming after you. I, you can think of a million reasons. I don't have to put them all out there, but you all know that when you're a young person with millions of dollars in your hands, people look at you differently, and they could look at you as a big dollar sign in some ways. Yeah. And so, but they quit doing that rookie transition program on site. And one of the reasons they did that is that I think they went more online with the whole thing because there are so many free agents that don't get the same message. I would love to see the data to see if maybe they need to go back to that, whether it's, and maybe now is the time to do the rookie transition program for them. It would be now in between regular camp and guys that are free agents that teams should have to send them and have them do that. There's a lot of valuable knowledge that can be gained. I've sat in on the NBA one, and based on the NBA ones, there's no excuse for those guys to not have any clue of what's going on. They lay everything out to those guys, and it gets down and dirty. They know exactly what's going on.
Jim's in Cleveland. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. all the details and facts that you maybe can call truths even behind all of this can never seem to hide the ultimate feeling of embarrassment from this organization. This Judkins situation is I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about everything overall. When will this city say enough is enough? Quit embarrassing. I mean, they've had moments where they look like they might be turning a corner, but just in typical Browns fashion, they blow it. I'm not sure when it was ever good, really. It was only transient at best.
It was good when I was a kid. I mean, when they were playing at the stadium, it was good then. I mean, look, the fact that the city rallied, and I'm not trying to go back in history, but I will. I'll go back, 30 years.
It's been a while,
I mean, I get it.
We've got to move on to the present and the future.
Okay,
I
mean, so I'll be here in the present with you. Are you saying you don't want a football team?
Unfortunately, and I hate to say that, Andy, because I know what the Browns mean to this. I know what they mean to me. But we can't keep doing this to ourselves, guys.
Jim, you're doing it to yourself. If you don't want to be a football fan, don't be a football fan. That's it.
I do. Listen. Move them. There has to be room in Canton. Move them down there. Build a stadium down there. Make them the Canton Bulldogs, baby.
All right, Jim.
Goodbye, Jim. There we go. That's the answer. Everyone's mad that they're moving on the other side of a boundary for the city of Cleveland. Now you want to move them down to Stark County. Okay. It is what it is. It's the price you pay, and I've heard Jeff say this 1,000 times. It's the price you pay for having an NFL team. Guess what? Your team could suck every year in and out. Your ownership might be the worst ownership in the history of sports. Could be the best ownership in the history of sports. This is the price you pay for having an NFL team. Guess what? I'm looking at every team. Every team has had someone arrested at least twice since 2015. Is it a bad look? Absolutely. Yep. But it's the same bad look that every NFL city has. So really, if you don't want a team, I'd love to put you back in a Wayback Machine to feel what it felt like when this team left here. And I don't care. Not, so you want to call me old? Call me old. I don't care. But it was miserable. Absolutely miserable to have to sit out and watch the rest of the league keep moving forward while your team was playing in Baltimore. I get it. I don't like everything that's going on. But the embarrassment is just part of it, and drama is drama. The team is valued at $6 billion. Come on. There's a business there.
Though the Browns have had their more than their fair share of these incidents, the entire league has had these things. So let's see how this plays out with Judkins. And if he's lucky, everything gets released or dismissed and there's no issues. And if there are issues, and even if we'll see what the NFL decides to do, legal's one thing, NFL's another thing here. There are two different things going on, and we'll figure it all out. Guardians are on the All-Star break. Guardians are drafting baseball players. Guardians are drafting strange baseball players for the Guardians. They're also drafting guys with names that are difficult to pronounce. We'll get to the bottom of it. We'll have the number one pick pronounce his name for us because you could pronounce it five different ways. Next on Baskin and Phelps. And it's a philosophical shift in the organization. This is not just a coincidence. It's coming up. That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Meredith is taking your phone calls at 216-474-0092. That'd be Meredith Kane. She'll be doing 2020s moving forward. Dan Menigan standing behind the glass for us. We're going to get into the Guardians and their draft and their good play going into the break in just a second. We were talking about the Browns, Quinshon Judkins, what's ahead, what's going to happen. Hopefully we find out some real facts behind this case. Before we get to the baseball, Steve's in Cleveland. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Morning. Morning, guys. I love the show. I listen to you every day.
Thanks.
Appreciate but to get into it, Andy, I agree with you. The NFL needs to have some kind of orientation for these rookies coming in. I don't care when you start. If you sign them towards the end and the season's already, they got to go through the orientation first.
Yeah, so
companies do this.
Yeah, Steve, they do. They have the NFL rookie transition program. They did it for years, and they did it in Cleveland. So, like, all of the rookies would come in, and it just reading what they have online from NFL operations, they're just saying that nearly 55% of all NFL rookies signed with their clubs as undrafted free agents. So that meant that more than half the new players weren't receiving the information they needed. So now what they do is, I think they do this whole thing online, and they've got to watch. I mean, but yeah, you know as well as I do, if you're not doing it in person and someone's saying you've got to watch this, although I do want to say that when our company makes us do this, I watch these things intently. I want to know everything.
You're all over them,
baby. Because I don't want to miss any of the questions at the end. Sure. But, I mean, sometimes people just kind of fly through and half listen to stuff that's online, especially when no one's monitoring you. You know what I'm saying? The league does, but they need to do more. That's the thing.
They need to make it for each team. Each team needs to do their own orientation, and then you have to inspect what you expect. So then every year you should call at least the first 2 years, call them back in, call the sophomores back in, and go over it again so they understand the rules. Same thing in business. Every day I'm a manager, I go over the rules with the people in the building so they understand it, if the consequences.
There you go. And Steve, I agree with you. They need continuing education, I think, just like we all have to. So at NFL operations, which anyone can see this online, they make the rookies go through 15 mandatory topics, which range from player benefits, and just like any of us would in any other work situation, player expectations, the importance of sportsmanship, respect in the workplace, media responsibilities, how to work with their PR staff, social responsibility. And it says straight out, social responsibility for players, which covers the league's policies and the ramifications of issues like driving under the influence or committing acts of domestic violence or sexual assault. It is right there for every player to see. I mean, they're not hiding from it, and they know it's an issue, but they've got to try to do more with it.
All right, can I throw this out, though?
Sure.
Are you a citizen?
Yes.
It's right there for all of us to see. It's called the law.
Well, but they want to hold it, just like, they want to hold their players to higher standards than just the law. The law shouldn't be the bar. It should be the floor.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. We've just been given the police report about all this incident. We'll go through it. And if there's anything in it that we're not aware of, we'll pass that along.
It's the probable cause statement is from the Fort Lauderdale Police Department.
So we'll check it. We'll check that out and get back to you. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Guardians are drafting baseball players. Strange for the Guardians. They're drafting big baseball players who hit the ball hard. One of them is a shortstop, but he's 6'3". How about that? And he hits the ball pretty hard. I kind of like that. Clearly, they've had some kind of a philosophical shift here, Andy, because you're not able to sit here and tell me, I wouldn't believe it anyway, that the best player available, if that's what they're looking for, happened to be in a row for the Guardians. 6'6", 230 pounds, 6'3", 218, 6'3", 219, 6'5", 223, all with resumes where they hit the baseball. Three of them outfielders.
How about that? How exciting is that?
Well, I'm not even going to be exciting because Mr. Baseball himself, Dan Manigan, I was talking to him about it before the show, and I said, boy, you know, they draft all these guys. It's the baseball draft that doesn't matter. Yes, that's true.
No,
it's such a crapshoot as to whether these guys develop or not. The interesting thing to me is that these are, and everybody will tell you, Kyle McDaniel, ESPN, Guardians lean into power. The Guardians often draft or sign internationally hit first players who are often underpowered. With Stephen Kwan, a prominent example, they swerved a lot this year. That's the point to me. It's like, wow, where'd this come from?
You despise more than anything else when people misquote you. You despise it. You loathe it.
I do.
This is one of those moments where you have misquoted me.
Oh.
You hence tell them.
Hence the reason that I said, hang on. It matters. It's just a crapshoot.
Exactly.
It severely matters. It's how you build your team. It's how you have sustained success. It's how you're able to get the players that you have mixed with the fact that you could use them and use those players to make trades if you're everybody else except the Guardians.
There you go.
Just want to make sure that the record reflects as such. It's not that it's utterly meaningless.
We have that out there.
It's a total game of roulette.
Well, that it is. And guess what? The more chips you put down on the roulette table, the more chips you put down, the better your chances of having that little ball land in where it's the little slot that has your little number on it. So if you're looking to add power to your organization.
But you're also betting against yourself.
And you're looking to add outfielders to your organization.
Yes.
You drafted three of them yesterday in the first three rounds of the draft. They had five picks yesterday. They took one high school pitcher. The other four players, all college hitters, all big guys. I like it. Now, their number one pick is a guy named Jace. And first of all, I love this. Before last year, when his batting average in college slipped to like 258, which is not good. College hitters, if you're good, don't hit 258. Even in big time college baseball, you don't hit 258. Nonetheless, big time power guy who before the season started, there was talk that he could be the number one overall pick. His name is Jace. And then his name is L-A capital V-I-O-L-E-T-T-E. I immediately went and looked at a lot of video on him. Mm-hmm. Interesting swing. Some might think not a good swing. Dan O'Dowd was one of those guys, former general manager of the Rockies, former assistant GM here under John Hart. Dan said, I love this guy. He hits it hard, blah, blah, blah. I would completely redo his swing. Dan hated his swing.
Huh.
Completely redo his swing because I don't think this is going to work, basically is what he said. Anyhow, that's his name, La Violette. However, every play-by-play guy that I heard do the game said Lavalette, like lava, and then, you know, like a lava lamp. Every play-by-play guy said Lavalette.
Huh.
We've seen what?
Lavalette.
Laviolette, written down as a pronunciation.
Laviolette.
Laviolette is the way it would look like because after the la, it's violet.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the Fan.
This is a total Dr. Redpen segment.
Here at the I don't want to butcher the guy's name.
I don't either. That's why I say Lavalette. 21 years old.
There's Andy Baskin. What's his name? All the way.
Jace Lavalette.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the way that Jace pronounces his name.
Jace Lavalette.
Dan, one more time.
Jace Lavalette.
He pronounces a Y there.
Laviolette.
Laviolette. One more. Load it up, baby.
Jace Laviolette.
Jace Laviolette. Laviolette. So there you go.
Lavia.
Not lava, as every play-by-play guy who did a game for Texas A&M last year said. Laviolette. Laviolette.
I'm done. Game over. Smarter. Be a hero. Be a real hero.
Kyle...
Thank you. We're not going to get any smarter than this today.
Kylie McDaniel, in his ESPN little summation of the pick, made me think, huh? And then, oh! He said, I compare him to Cody Bellinger. That made me go, huh. Or Joey Gallo. And that made me go, ah! Joey Gallo, career batting average of 194. But he hit it a long way, and he's 6'5", 6'6", 200 and some odd pounds.
I don't know.
What do you think of...
I think the guy can hit home runs if he's healthy. He busted his hand during the playoffs, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah.
I love the idea that they got a guy who, at one point, a year ago, was considered maybe the first overall pick in the draft. I also love the fact that they didn't just double down. They doubled down and doubled down and doubled down and drafted college guys, Andy, who are big and who hit. What do college guys who hit mean? Sometimes means they're quick to the majors.
Well, they're already older.
Caglione, Nick Kurtz, drafted last year, already up.
Mm-hmm.
Kurtz has done okay. Caglione has struggled, but it's been early. Give him time. In theory, I'm not going to say next year. By 2027, one, two of these guys might be knocking on the door.
Jeff, don't we say this every year? I'm just asking.
No.
I'm not trying to be...
Not with this team, we don't, because they don't draft these kind of guys. Last year, they had the number one pick, and they took a second baseman, for God's sake. Nick Kurtz was on the board. He's already up and hitting for the A's. Didn't take him. Big dude who hits it a long way. Jack Caglione, big dude who hits it a long way. Already up with Kansas City. We took a second baseman from Australia, who's a good hitter and good player. He's not here. He's injured. We'll see. What this does to me, it signifies, if not a shift in philosophy, an acknowledgement that we don't have this in our system. And we need to bring in several guys who might be able to put this in our system. And they've done it. Laviolette, Aaron Walton, Nolan Schubart. Know those names. And Dean Curley is a shortstop who's 6'3", 218. Who's the shortstop of the future of this team? I don't think we have one. Mm-mm. Maybe it's Dean Curley. What'd you think of the shift in philosophy, folks? 216-474-0092. To me, at the very least, it says, man, are we lacking guys who can hit the ball hard and a long way? And we better get some, and we better get some now. Although they've been down this road before. I'll explain that next on Baskin and Phelps.